Hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/247sports. That's ZipRecruiter.com/247sports.
Welcome to the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast with your hosts Chip Patterson and Barton Simmons, the ultimate insider's guide from signing day to the national championship game and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the 24/7 Sports College Football Podcast.
Oh, yes! That's right. This is it. Like we're in full effect now. We've got games to recap. We've got our final chance to make picks. Barton, man, we watched real life football that counted in the standings this weekend. It felt good.
Felt really good. I'm glad to get your energy to wake me up this morning, Chip. It was like a double dip weekend for me. I had all that football to keep me excited, but I was in the middle of it all. I had a 2-year-old birthday party I had to get ready for, and my wife is full speed ahead with 2-year-old birthday parties, so that wore me out as well. Man, I'm just, you know, now I get to kind of zero in, refocus, and get ready for week one.
Week zero's in the background. Did you at least be able to make, you know, as you're trying to balance all your different responsibilities, as we talked about at the end of last week, there was a lot of top high school talent in action on Friday on a national stage in some of these big, high-profile early season games. We did have, of course, Oregon State just getting blitzkrieged by Colorado State. Great showing for Mike Bobo. We're going to get to break down a few thoughts from week zero here in a little bit. Did you put up enough of like a fight, a resistance, a performance, you know, as it's full speed ahead? Like, do you feel like you're showing up? Like, are you showing up like San Jose State, or are you showing up like Rice? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, are you able to get out there and at least have an impact? Because, yeah, I kind of feel like of all the places to start for the weekend, like Stanford 62, Rice 7, that's one that just jumps off the score. I was watching this instead of the fight, and I was loving every bit of it.
First of all, speaking of the fight, had every intention of watching that, but based on my day of 2-year-old birthday party, I was out cold on the couch at 9:45 p.m. So I missed the fight.
It was Barton Simmons TKO 2-year-old birthday party.
Right. I was able to watch the first three or four drives, I feel like, of the Stanford Rice, but that was a bigger bloodbath than any fight could have possibly been. I mean, that was just mass murder out there. Man, what an impressive showing for Stanford. We released our rankings or our Pac-12 predictions, and I made a last-minute change on mine before we released them. I switched to Washington as my North winner and Washington as my Pac-12 winner, but before that, I was very close to putting Stanford as my North winner and Stanford as my Pac-12 winner too, and making them a playoff team because I do love this Stanford team, but I had my doubts about Keller Christ. Could he do it? Could he get the job done? I don't know if that's necessarily been answered based on that Rice showing, but holy cow, the rest of the team looked ready to roll. So Stanford, man, USC and the USC Stanford game, I guess we got 2 weeks before that one. That game is going to be something else.
One of the things we're going to be doing here today is providing a little bit of an explainer. Our expert picks, our final calls, our playoff picks, our national championship picks, our Heisman Trophy picks, they're all going to be going up on CBSSports.com. We are going to provide a little bit of context, a little bit of a preview, or an explainer, depending on when you see those. But man, I came real close. I was a little bit late turning in my thing. I'm sitting here looking at my handwritten notes. I was about to put Stanford in the playoff just based on a knee-jerk reaction. I feel like the takeaway for me is that it makes the Stanford-USC debate so much fun to play out because we get the one early season matchup that you just mentioned. But if you are looking at the Stanford team as one that is going to be able to get a head-to-head win against Washington, that's going to be able to avoid too many other traps along the way. And Pac-12 schedule, you know, I've mentioned it before, that nine-game schedule in a 12-team league, there's nowhere to hide. Everybody plays a tough schedule in the Pac-12. If Stanford can get to that Pac-12 championship game, I just think it makes it so fascinating to think about, all right, can either one of these teams, USC or Stanford, be able to get the sweep on the season? And I don't feel like one team is definitively going to be stronger enough than the other to be able to do that. And then that's when you start to look at depth. And I kind of feel like the Pac-12, because you've got Stanford as like a team that could be USC's equal, or Washington, a team that could be USC's equal, we might see the Pac-12 deal with one of these situations where everyone beats up on each other, where you've got a couple good teams that might be playoff worthy, but because of the way the chips fall at the end of the season and you got to pick four teams, they might end up being the conference that's left out.
Yeah, I think that's possible. We'll see. I mean, I think Washington, Stanford, USC are going to be the class of the Pac-12. I think, you know, obviously Stanford, Washington play each other. Washington misses USC. Stanford plays USC. That's part of the reason that I ended up going with Washington, is just because they do get, you know, miss USC, and if they can just handle their business the rest of the way, even if they lose on the road on a Friday night at Stanford late in the season, I think Stanford's got a tougher schedule, may have another loss in there somewhere. Washington may be able to survive that run and get in there with one win or one loss and play USC in the finals. So I don't know. I think that conference, similar to the Big 12, has a lot of parity. Not a lot of easy games, like you said, nowhere to hide. But it's going to be about taking care of your business, because I think those three teams, to me, are clearly better than the others.
And then, like, you know, part of taking care of your business is for USC getting it done against Utah, or for Washington getting it done in the Apple Cup against Washington State, because they are the first class, but that second tier, it's no pushovers at all. No, Oregon State, that's for sure.
Dude, so I got my first heckling from the internet fans, or the internet tough guys. So this I was sitting there first half, right? Like, I watched pretty much all the first half of Oregon State, Colorado State. And I thought, honestly, I thought Oregon State kind of looked like the better team in the first half.
Sure.
They controlled the pace. They had, you know, some big play opportunities. I thought they should have
created
counted
some
the
turnovers.
Touchdown at the end of the half. I thought it really should have been 24-17 at halftime. And then the birthday party kicked in, and I wasn't able to be quite as dialed in. And I tweeted early in the second half. I tweeted, Gary Anderson is going to make people remember he's a really good coach this fall. And harmless enough, right?
Yeah, dude,
and then,
absolutely.
And then they go on to get beat 58-27 or whatever it is, and just get run out of the house, and I get just lambasted by all the Twitter folks just saying, hey, nice pick, man. Like, you're the biggest idiot on, you know, college football, like, excuse for a college football expert out there, all this stuff. So it was good to feel the burn there, to just kind of feel alive and know, hey, they're out there listening, and they hate your guts for the first time this year. But that was interesting to see Colorado State just blow the doors off the last quarter and a half.
They were mentioning it on the broadcast. By the way, you know, I'm shameless plug for one of our colleagues on the broadcast side. Just love watching Aaron Taylor call a game and start hollering about the big boys up front. He'll start calling out blocking schemes as they're happening. It's just an incredibly informative and fun viewing experience. Nick Stevens looking great, threw for like 300 and some yards. But this Colorado State team, you know, obviously going to be one that in the Mountain West, where you've got a Wyoming led by Josh Allen, when you've got Ripien under center at Boise State, they're going to be able to hang for sure. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, they're offensively, they're stacked. And
right.
And I think Mike Bobo, what's interesting about Colorado State is Mike Bobo sort of on that cusp of being a hot coach for the next silly season, the next hiring cycle. And if he can keep on coaching up offense like that and keep on putting up those kind of points, his stock could rise really quickly this fall.
And isn't that kind of setting him up for a job that would be looking for the offensive infusion? You know, we oftentimes see, you know, if your team's been if your team has really been struggling to put points on the board, then you're going to hear the boosters and the fans start to call for like a Chad Morris type, or, you know, like that, the hot head coach with the offensive background whose teams have been able to go out there and put points on the board. And, you know, whether that's in the Big 12, whether that's in the Pac-12, I think that he's certainly setting himself up for a good opportunity there.
I agree. And there's going to be some turnover this year. I think, and even in the SEC, where he's got roots and he's a Southern guy, and there's going to be some opportunities. So Bobo is officially on the watch list now. Long gone are the days of Georgia fans crying for Mike Bobo's head. All of a sudden, he seems like the offensive genius. It's just funny.
All right. New head coach, new place, new face. Charlie Strong's debut for South Florida didn't really start all that well. First quarter, they find themselves down 16-0 to San Jose State, playing on the road. Then we talked about Sterling Gilbert, the offensive coordinator who came with him from Texas. It was at Tulsa before that with Philip Montgomery, sort of part one of these offensive coaching trees that we all seem to be watching to see how it plays out. Then things get rolling, four touchdowns in the second quarter, and then they're able to roll from that to a 42-22 win. I didn't get as many eyes on this one. I've gone back. I've looked at the takeaways. I've been breaking down with what little highlights I've been able to get. I can again, from, you know, the about an arm's length away, I feel like I can chalk some of this up to first year head coach starting on the road, week zero. The alarm bells are not going off for the Bulls for me. What did you see? What did you think?
I think that's a tough game. You're going to go into a 3/4 empty stadium in San Jose, California, different time zone, just, you know, it's going to sleepwalk through the first quarter for a little bit. It was just a little bit of a tough first atmosphere. And to San Jose State's credit, those guys really moved the ball well. I mean, even when they didn't score, they had a turnover when they were driving. They had some drop pass interception type plays. There's a lot of opportunity there for San Jose State that they weren't able to cash in on. So I do think that was there's something to watch there. The defense doesn't look vastly improved at USF than it was last year. I still think that they're a little bit overrated in terms of talking about a 12-0 season. I'm not going to put this game as any sort of a red flag, because, again, it is a game where they're playing in front of about 8,000 fans, and it's hard for those guys to get up for that type of atmosphere. So, not kicking dirt on Charlie Strong just yet, but I have thought and said it and wrote it when our AAC preview, that they're a little overrated and that there's going to take some time for this staff to settle in, and I think that we're seeing that early on.
Do you think that there's a spot, like, the 12-0 talk is absolutely overrated? Like, that is for a team that has a lot of question marks, a lot to replace from last year, and an entire changeover, and a pretty dangerous American Athletic Conference when you just, you know, look at the other teams in that league that, you know, might be are absolutely like not that far away from the Bulls. What do you think is a realistic expectation? Like, what would make South Florida rightly rated in your eyes? Like, what's a realistic prediction?
Well, what'd they go last? They were 10-2 last year,
yeah,
right? I think they could just run it back at 10-2. That's probably, you know, they're probably still a borderline top 25 team, and they're still gonna, you know, beat some really good teams and lose to a couple good teams. And I think that's kind of what this group is. I'm just not. I don't think that they are complete enough to do make a Boise State kind of run or an old Utah kind of run where they're, you know, sniffing the playoffs. And they're definitely not sniffing the playoffs because they don't play anybody out of conference. But to go undefeated, I just think you got to have a little bit more of a complete roster, play better defense, have a coaching staff that's settled in. I just think they've got some questions that I don't think are answered.
Temple, I don't think Temple is a gimme. They finished the season with Houston, Tulsa, and then at UCF. I think that's tough. I see 10-2, but I think the improvement this year would be 10-2 and then actually win the division because it was Temple a year ago that won the AAC East. So like South Florida was 10-2 and they were putting points on the board and it was a lot of fun and it got Willie Taggart the Oregon job. But if you want to be in the mix for the New Year's Six, I'm pretty sure you got to win your conference to be able to get nominated for that. So I think that would be the next step. That would be a step forward for sure for South Florida. All right. So two news notes over the weekend that I wanted to hit on. The first of which, certainly a scary headline, though it seems that right now, non-life-threatening injuries for Alabama defensive lineman Raekwon Davis caught a stray bullet in the leg outside of a Tuscaloosa bar. This is one of these stories where I have a hard time coming with a major take. I think it is absolutely worth mentioning because he's a sophomore that was expected to potentially start, absolutely be part of that rotation on the defensive line. But when you're talking about the Alabama defensive depth like we do, you got to strike more than one person from one game for me to really freak out.
Well, not only that, but he was battling for a starting job with Isaiah Bug, so they're going to be fine in that spot. That's an area where they can stand to take a hit. Anytime you're losing a 6'7", 315-pound defensive lineman, I mean, it's not totally insignificant, but I think long-term he's going to be back. Isaiah Bugs is fine as far as a starter in his place. If I'm Nick Saban, I'm just telling the guys, hey, guys, we're a week out from the biggest game, the biggest college football opener of all time. Maybe stay out the club for a couple days.
Dude.
I mean, especially a club where there's stray bullets flying around.
This is like,
go to a house party or something.
Yeah, you know? this is a club where there's been like multiple shootings in the last couple years. It's just a hot spot. You gotta know you leave there early. This is not a spot you want to be at when it's like everyone's standing around at the end of the night. Nah, you gotta make
Nothing
a business
good happens
decision.
After midnight.
Yeah. Thank you. Come on, y'all. Listen to Barton Simmons. Nothing good happens after midnight. Then we've got Wisconsin, more attrition at Wisconsin. And, you know, I was talking about the alarm bells, and I'm absolutely reactionary, and I'm going to freak out over some week one result, and I'm going to freak out over some, you know, late headlines just because we've been pounding. Like, I don't know about you, but we have to start, you know, like, we've got to start coming up with our takes and our opinions on the season in like early July, and so you just ride on them for like 2 months, then all of a sudden we start getting all these new developments, everything that I thought I knew isn't,
right.
You know, and you know, my Wisconsin could be creeping into the Big Ten at 12-0, then Jack Sitchy goes down, and then we learn this week Zach Braun, another linebacker, not necessarily a starter, but certainly part of that rotation in their offense, I mean, in their defense, is going to be out for the year with a foot injury. I look at those two, and you know what else? I remember that we've got to deal with more changeover on that staff, And suddenly my belief that this Wisconsin defense that was so much fun to watch last year, you know, without TJ Watt, without Jack Citchie, without Zach Braun, like all of a sudden, and no Justin Wilcox too, I'm starting to think my 12-0 prediction a little bit too bold. Maybe good at the time, but I'm backing off of it pretty hard. I think that it's going to be a little bit tougher for the Badgers to be able to live up to some of those potential playoff dark horse expectations.
Well, I mean, I picked Northwestern to win the division.
Oh, you've got it. You're ahead of it, man. Yeah.
Well, you know, I did it with, I mean, I'm certainly not like overly confident. And just like we talked about with Citchie, Wisconsin's got guys behind these starters and these regular players that are ready, and they're going to have their opportunities. But look, first year coordinator, I still don't think that their offense with a new starter at running back, with Alex Hornibrook at quarterback, who wasn't setting the world on fire last year, it's going to take a couple games for me to remember why I like Wisconsin so much. Because right now, as they start to get depleted a little bit defensively, and I look up and their offense is sort of a bunch of really good offensive linemen and some more anonymous skill players, I need to see a couple games to get back on the Washington train. But right now I'm still feeling Northwestern.
Zach Braun, by the way, not Zach Braun. This is the kind of struggle that you have when you're trying to get out there and you're trying to look for talent. You sometimes lose a very talented piece of your team, and then all of a sudden you've got to go out there and find it. And it can be tough. But with ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites with just one click. So then businesses of all sizes, if all of a sudden you find yourself in a spot to need a replacement, to need some talent, you need to link up with ZipRecruiter, because unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. In fact, it finds them. 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within one day. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Simply screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/247sports. That's ZipRecruiter.com/247sports. One more time, try it for free today, ZipRecruiter.com/247sports. All right, last like bold, spicy, you know, hard takes. This is the last time that we're going to have game picks coming up at the end of the week. Well, I heard that the production team is currently in the lab trying to figure out what the game picks jingle is going to be. Really,
that's the best. I mean, that's what's got people tuning in, is the jingles, the new jingles. Man, that's like a we're on a cliffhanger there waiting for that next jingle. I'm ready for it.
It's coming. You know, I'll get a documentary team in here, and then I'll release a DVD like after Jay-Z did the Black Album with different chapters for each song. All right, let's start here at the at your playoff four. Then we'll go to champion. Then we'll defend some of our overrated, underrated, and then Heisman. Does that work for you?
Let's do it.
All right. So who is your playoff four?
Number four, the four seed, Washington Huskies. Mm. Number three, Clemson Tigers. Two, Bama. One, Ohio State.
All right, so is that with Ohio State going undefeated or a one-loss, one-seed Ohio State?
I'm inclined to say undefeated Ohio State, but it doesn't... I think undefeated Ohio State, because I've got them as my one seed. I think that they beat Oklahoma. I think that they, because the early in the year, I put, you know, during the summer, I wrote that the Big Ten was the top conference. I regret writing that, because I don't believe that anymore. I think that the Big Ten is the best, has the best national title pool of contenders, but they are very bottom weak, and they Ohio State has a lot of easy games in conference that I think allows them to tool up for the important games and focus in on the important games. And so I do think there's a very real possibility we see them go undefeated. Certainly they could trip up somewhere and still get in there as even the one seed, depending on who they lose to, when they lose, and how they do in the Big Ten championship game. But I just think Ohio State is this year's most talented team in college football.
All right, my four, Florida State four, with my bold prediction that Florida State becomes the first two-loss team to make the college football playoff.
I could see that. I like that.
Oklahoma 3, Ohio State 2, Alabama 1.
Gotcha. I like it. So here are my questions. I considered Oklahoma 2, and the only reason I basically didn't is that would be it's just hard for me to envision first year 33-year-old coach Lincoln Riley living up to expectations to that degree where he's got them playing in a national title game. I still think, or national or college football playoffs. I still think Oklahoma wins the Big 12, but I think they're going to have a loss to Ohio State, I think. And they'll have another loss somewhere in the Big 12, I think. I just don't know if they can get in there with 10-2. So you are assuming then, with Oklahoma in, that they're either A, beating Ohio State, or B, running the table in the Big 12.
Correct.
Which or both are they doing?
Either one. I think it's one or the other. Okay. The prediction is made with the idea that if they are a conference champion who has won the conference championship game and the only loss is to another college football playoff team, this was paired with my Pac-12 cannibalization theory.
Right.
This was paired with the idea that as you're sitting down on championship weekend, maybe USC gets Stanford early, but then Stanford gets the rematch, or vice versa. Like, something happens in the Pac-12 that causes all of a sudden, similar to Ohio State jumping in, it was just one of those moments where it looked a little bit messy, and they need like someone to stand out, and that's where Oklahoma just shows up in the Big 12 championship game and like wins by 25 or something. Like they in the first Big 12 championship game play their way into the field, and I think that Florida State ends up doing the same, where they show up in the ACC championship game and look awesome. And if that's happening at the same time as the Pac-12 picture is just getting really, really messy, I think that the committee will choose the path of least resistance. They've got four Power 5 conference champions, and yeah, Florida State's got two losses, but one of them will be to a team that I predict will be the undefeated one seed, the Alabama Crimson Tide.
So with my Washington pick in the Pac-12, I sort of in part agree with your Pac-12 theory, because I think USC might very well be the best team in the Pac-12, but they have no bye weeks. They've got Stanford early. They play Texas, which is a tricky game. At Washington State, obviously they've got Utah, on the road at Notre Dame, which could be a much improved Notre Dame team. And then they'll get what I think is probably Washington in the Pac-12 championship game. I just think it's a treacherous road for USC. Whereas the flip side there with Washington's schedule is you have no tests outside conference, which is you shouldn't be rewarded for, but in this case I think Washington benefits from. They have no road games after October, or they have one road game after October 14th.
Wow.
They play four of their last five at home. That at Stanford game that is in the middle of that run is a tough game, no question. But I think that Stanford's, they may have two losses at that point in their own right. So it's the reason I picked Washington in the playoffs last year is because of their schedule. And the reason I picked them in this playoffs this year is sort of the same reason. They're really good, and they've just got an easier road. And when I look at the playoffs, I try to find teams that have realistic roads to get in. I think Washington has a reasonable road. So they're my four for that reason. And then I have Clemson in there, you know, in contrast to your Florida State pick, because again, I think they're getting Florida State at home.
Yeah.
Which to me makes all the difference. That's what's going to, I think both are going to survive for the most part, the rest of the conference play. But they've got the biggest game at home. And so I've got Clemson winning that one, and conversely have Clemson winning the conference.
So I think that when I'm looking at my general playoff picture, I put Bama and Ohio State in the top tier. I've got like FSU, Clemson, Stanford, USC, and like I'll put Washington there because your realistic road argument's good. I've got Oklahoma in there, and I think that's the end. Like I'll give you Washington for sure. That is a very good argument. I think that if I'm drawing a line in college football for the playoff picture, Washington deserves to be in there. But Bama, Ohio State, tier one, tier two, Florida State and Clemson, Stanford, USC, Washington, and Oklahoma. And man, I think that's it.
I got a couple of teams I think are realistic. For instance, when Clemson plays Auburn in like week two or three or whatever that is, my theory is the winner of that game gets into the playoffs.
Wow.
Like I think I could see, because that will be such, let's say Auburn wins, Clemson goes, I still think Clemson could continue to run the table. And I think that they, you know, if they beat Florida State, if they get to the Pac-12 championship game, the ACC championship game, win it. Let's say a one-loss Clemson is the champion of the ACC. And let's say Auburn beats Clemson, runs the table in the SEC, which I think Auburn is good enough to do that. They've got a really good defense. They've got a quarterback that I think is not enough people are talking about as like a Heisman Trophy candidate and a potential first-round draft pick. I mean, they like him at Auburn. They think he's really special. I know we've heard that before, but this time I've seen it with my own eyes, and I'm in. So if Auburn runs the table, even then goes and loses in the Iron Bowl in a close competitive game, then Alabama's in, but Auburn with one loss to Alabama and a close loss, and having already beaten Clemson, who at that point is an ACC champion with a one loss, you got to put Auburn in at that point. And so I think that's like a very specific scenario, but I think it's also a realistic scenario. So I think Auburn is good enough to be in there. I also think you got to put Penn State as a team that is good enough to make it, because they have quarterback play. They're going to be good enough on defense. Offense will be one of the best in the country. And then I could see a scenario that Stanford's in there too, as we talked about earlier.
Okay. I mean, I've got this literally like I'm sitting here updating my my hand. Like normally I take a lot of notes on the computer, but man, this is crunch time. I need to be confident enough in my takes that I'm willing to put them down with pen and paper on undeletable tree that has been processed into nice ACC notepads. Given
so, what changes were you just making to your takes then? You're just jotting stuff down. Are you building your case against what I was saying, or am I changing your mind? What alterations are your takes getting right now?
Well, all right. So both the Auburn and Penn State are based on ideas that are shaking the cornerstone of my worldview. The cornerstone of my worldview being that Alabama and Ohio State are the only two teams with the roster to be able to sustain almost any of the normal, pitfalls that could be in a college football season. Like, losing two games or not winning their conference. Like, for Ohio State, not winning your conference doesn't even matter. They didn't even win their division, and they still made the college football playoff.
Yeah.
This is in that new post-2016 world where I think the college football playoff selection committee can be like, yeah, but I mean, they're nasty. We got to put them in. We're trying to pick the best team in college football, and like, unless we are wildly surprised, and again, wildly surprised by the on-field performance of future NFL players coached by two of the greatest college football coaches of all time, which I don't think we will be, then I kind of feel like this has got to break with Bama and Ohio State in the playoff.
Yes, I think. I mean, I agree absolutely, but that's not to say these aren't like the best teams ever assembled. And I think Penn State and Auburn are two teams that are capable of beating those two teams.
Sure.
And so that's, you know, Penn State could pull that off. And I mean, they did it last year, and they'll be better this year. Penn State should be. So that's going to be fascinating to see how that plays out. But yeah, I think there's, to me, there's the four I picked, and then I got 10. I got 10 potential playoff teams that I consider. I think two are locks. With as you said, I think Ohio State and Alabama are in. They're too talented not to make it.
They're so nasty. It's so, all right. So those are our champion picks. Surprise, spoiler alert. You've got the Buckeyes. You know where were you leaning when you were trying to make the decision for your title pick?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I could see Alabama winning it too. I think Ohio State, my hunch is that they're the most talented team in the college football this year. And when you talk about talent along with experience, I think Alabama might have the most talented roster in college football, but there's a lot of guys that are sort of unproven right now. So with Ohio State's depth at the defensive front, with the guys that they're, you know, with their quarterback who's experienced, and I know JT Barrett looked like absolute, you know what, at the end of the year last year, like it's, I think with Kevin Wilson as the offensive coordinator, Ryan Day as their quarterback's coach, he's going to be good. I think he's going to have a good year. And I think that they've got so many skill guys around and that complement what they want to do offensively, that they will be, I think, really good. But ultimately, that's about that defensive line. Same reason I have Clemson in the playoffs is the same reason I have Ohio State winning it, is because defensive line play to me puts you in a great position to win championships. So I'm on Ohio State. I think Urban Meyer is due for one, and I think it's going to be tough to beat the Buckeyes this year.
It's how about that offensive line too? That might be a slept on group for me. I feel like I'm not given that group, which averages like what, 6'4", 310 right across the line. I might not be given that group as much credit.
Well, they didn't get. I mean, that was a weakness of theirs last year, if you can call it that. And so I think that they want to be improved there, but I think they will be improved there. I think that they've recruited so well that it's hard not to be.
And you mentioned Kevin Wilson. Kevin Wilson was a phenomenal offensive coordinator, like record-breaking offensive coordinator at Oklahoma.
I know. Not a bad head coach at Indiana, but people have already sort of forgotten how incredible those offenses were for him at OU. So I think that offense is going to be pretty tough to handle this year at Ohio State, in part because of Kevin Wilson, but also is again, I am not a believer in JT Barrett as an NFL quarterback, but man, I think he's poised for a really good year because of what they've got around him and the coaches in place.
All right.
Sell me on Bama.
Yeah. I started thinking about this. I could see us, I could see Nick Saban and Brian Daboll selling Tua and Jalen Hurts on a two quarterback attack, and they just might be unstoppable.
Old like Steve Spurrier days, like that was not exactly two quarterback system as much as it was like let's keep these guys uncomfortable and make sure they know that if they screw up, there's someone's going to take their job. Yeah, like actually working it to where they both come in and situations to be successful.
Yeah,
I could see that. If they do that, man, that's ballsy.
Right. I mean all right, so I was trying to think back when Urban did it with Tebow and Leak, Was Tebow mostly just short yardage?
I mean, that, yeah, well, I don't know if it was. Tebow was their, obviously, was their bulldozer running back at quarterback. It was, he was absolutely a short yardage guy. Yeah, I guess it was. I mean, I don't really remember. Like, they wouldn't have had Tebow in there in like a, just your typical, like a third and seven or something.
Yeah, it wasn't a rotation by series either. It was situational.
No.
Yeah, I'm thinking, what if Saban and Brian Daboll can sell him on like series by series rotations? I mean, that would give defensive coordinators fits. You would just have two different offenses to prepare for.
But you'd have to prepare two different offenses too.
Ooh.
Like that cuts both ways in terms of the preparation and practice for Alabama. There's been successful two quarterback systems, and I think in most of those, you do have the running quarterback that comes in and the short yardage, and I don't know that I can't remember any where the running quarterback is the starter, and you bring in the passing quarterback for like third and longs. Like that's a little research project maybe I need to check out. Like just like I. If that's the way they play it, that would be
unbelievable.
That would be something I've never seen, and so that. But it's fascinating to know how things are going to turn out there, because I think it's clear Tua's the better passer, but you know Jalen Hurts just led the team to a national title game.
He's a special, he's a special talent. He was like the best. He was one of the best runners in the SEC last year. Any position.
Yeah.
I think that ultimately this is the, I kind of factored in some revenge. I wouldn't be surprised to see Ohio State win this all again. I think it's either Alabama or Ohio State because of once you get to the playoff, I mean, we've just seen, you need to have one of those rosters where your backups at every position are better than their backups. You need to be talented on another level. Like you're playing, you need to win not just like one hyped up game in Glendale. You need to be able to win two games against the best teams in college football. And the two teams that seem like they can do that are Alabama and Ohio State. I'm thinking like if Minkah Fitzpatrick can stay healthy, you know, Rashawn Evans, like there's just another crop of dudes that I'm looking at after, you know, seeing them in Tampa and seeing them fall short in like an absurd way, you know, like in a 99 play game on a rub play at the very end, you know, like this is, they were right there. And I kind of see, I don't know. I'm going Bama.
I am not hating that pick.
Yeah.
Trust me. Yeah, you're not going to get cross-examined too hard on that one. Alabama's got like it's what they have personnel-wise is so absurd. I mean, they've had seven straight number one recruiting classes. It's unprecedented. So they're going to be just fine, and it's going to be fun to watch Brian Daboll and start an offense that no one really sees coming. So I'm with you. My hunch is Ohio State.
Man, I might actually make my whole explanation that I got to write here in a bit. What if the change of pace quarterback is a downfield passer? What if I told you, hashtag 30 for 30 voice, that the change of pace quarterback is the one that can beat you, that can hit Calvin Ridley for a 45-yard pass on a post route.
Yeah, and at that point, when you got the receivers and the backs that Alabama has, hey, you can kind of tell a team what you're going to run, but you're still going to get yours.
Hey, so here's the route combination that we've got for Ridley, Foster, and Jerry Jeudy. Good luck.
We're running all goes, and if you guys sit back, we're just going to dump it off to Najee Harris, good luck, guys.
Hey, so you had Auburn included in your playoff. You also are going to have to explain to the people Auburn and LSU being teams that you are deeming as overrated.
No. Underrated Auburn.
Ooh, okay.
Overrated LSU.
Got it.
So
I've got your Auburn underrated, basically.
Yeah, that was the same argument
for the playoff. But LSU overrated.
LSU overrated. We've got – they're coming off – what were they, 8-4 regular season last year?
Yep.
They didn't get better at quarterback.
And that was 8-4 with a bowl win. Because remember, it was 7-4 heading into the postseason.
That's right. Yeah. So 8-4 with a bowl win. 4-loss regular season. They have – they're not better at the quarterback position, which has been their problem. They have a very unproven head coach. Look, as much as you may like Ed Orgeron, as much as you may think he is the right hire, to say that he is a known commodity is – I mean, hey, if he is a known commodity, it's a bad commodity. Because all we know right now is you know, his struggles as a head coach at Ole Miss – and that he's just not super experienced as an SEC head coach. At least he hasn't been in several years. A little bit of a ramble there, but I just think we don't know what Ed Orgeron is. So there's that. There's the fact that I guess the problem with me is they're like 12th in the preseason or 13th, I think, in the AP preseason poll. And while they are talented, I think at some point LSU's got to prove something. They got to do something. Right now they're just still a bunch of really talented players that aren't winning big games, and Coach O is not the. If Tom Herman was here, hey, maybe you got your that's your answer. All right, now we can get on board. But Coach O is. I mean, we'll talk after the season. And figure out what body of work he put together. But preseason, you can't sort of put the pin on him and say he's the answer. Now I have long thought Matt Canada is the real deal at offensive coordinator. So I think that they'll be good there. I think they'll be improved. But again, look, when you're in the same division as Auburn and Alabama, I think Mississippi State is an improved team, and I just think that LSU is going to have a tough road. If they're 8-4 again, which I think is not unrealistic, then they're not going to be 12th in the country. So it was a little bit of a nitpicking to pick LSU because I didn't have a real beef with anyone in the preseason AP top 25, and that's sort of how I looked at mine from an overrated standpoint. But LSU all the way up there at 12 or 13. Again, I just think they need to prove something to get to that point to me.
Yeah, I think the only thing that is separating LSU from Texas A&M in my mind is that LSU's been winning that game at the end of the season pretty much every year. You know, like talented roster, but still like not. This isn't 2011. Like I view LSU as a tier two team in the SEC West.
And I also think they're a little thin on offensive line. They've lost a couple guys there. They've had Arden Key is how healthy is he? There's enough questions there that they don't need to be knocking on the top 10's door. I think if Stanford lined up against LSU in week one, and Stanford I think is behind LSU in the
slightly,
in the AP top
I think
25.
They're like at 14 or something like that.
Yeah, I think Stanford would win by two scores. Now that's easy for me to say now, having watched Stanford for a week. But I'm very curious what's going to happen in that BYU LSU game. I think that's a real losable game for LSU, even after BYU, you know, piddled around with Portland State last week. I think that's a tough matchup. So, that's just where I'm at with LSU. Good team, but let's pump our brakes a little bit before we're ready to put them in top 10.
I got USC is overrated, and it's again like you said. You know, I'm looking at the poll and I'm seeing, you know, number four, and I think that there's a lot of reaction to the last nine games, and I kind of feel like, you know, USC even during these like so-called dark years, there was only the one year that they were in the Sun Bowl and they were like 7-6. Like they've always ended up still winning. By the end of the year, 8, 9, even maybe 10 games, you know, they've always had a top 5, top 10 level talent. It's just that the performance over a season has included these one or two losses or these three losses along the way that end up having them be more of like a top 15, top 20 type team. And man, you kind of terrified me when we were talking about it in the Pac-12 preview, because you're right. If anything happens to Sam Darnold, and given his NFL stock, you kind of got to treat him like you can't expect Sam Darnold to just gut it out through a sprained knee and wait for the offseason for surgery if you think that you're going to be able to, if you think there's going to be more damage if he takes another hit. And if all of a sudden they find themselves with Matt Fink or Jack Sears in the middle of that run with no bye week, like, I just, you know, like, if you're giving them the top five based on the potential, if everything goes right, then yeah, I'm with it. But in general, I just think the margin for error is much smaller with USC. You know, I kind of feel like there's no way the bottom falls out. But if we're talking about them as being a potential 12-0 team heading into the Pac-12 championship game, I think that that's a little much.
Yeah, and I you know, like I mentioned earlier too, I think that this is a tricky schedule. I think Texas non-conference is a tough game. Notre Dame non-conference is a tough game. Western Michigan non-conference, they should win that.
Oh,
but
you've got the Broncos. You've got the Broncos against the spread.
To have that be your one just sort of bye week non-conference game is, I mean, you got to go in there ready to play. So it's just that's going to be a draining 12-week season with no bye week, where you have to be mentally prepared every week, because say what you will about the Pac-12, maybe it's not the best conference of college football, but as we've mentioned, there is every team in that conference is decent. Like, there's no horrible teams in that conference. Arizona maybe could fall under like the bad team category, but they had a ton of injuries last year and they should be better this year. So, you know, it's just that's one of the reasons that I wasn't ready to put them in the playoffs, because I just think their season is a grind this year, and I could just see them getting tripped up a couple times.
All right, Heisman pick, who you got?
I went Mason Rudolph.
I like it.
Oklahoma State. You know, I know their offensive line has to prove some things, but I think he's got the best group of wide receivers in college football. He's got an NFL arm. They're going to put up a ton of points. They're going to play in meaningful games. You don't have to worry about them, Oklahoma State, being just sort of, I know they're not as high profile a program as some others, and you kind of need some high profile opportunity if you're going to win the Heisman. But I think that they will be playing, and they're high enough ranked preseason that they'll be playing in meaningful, high profile games. So I just like him distributing the ball to Jalen McCleskey and Marcel Aitman and James Washington and all those guys, and just putting up too big of numbers to ignore. So if he's sitting there at 11-1, even 10-2, throwing for 340 yards a game, then I don't know how you don't give it to him.
Yeah, it's what is the math? Like, either for quarterbacks, it's either you are a key piece of a national championship contender, or you have like country's best statistical greatness, and you are a Power Five quarterback. Like, you
and
know,
he could have both.
He could, if he checks both those boxes, then, like, I mean, he might burn down Bedlam. I mean, he might take T. Boone Pickens Stadium and throw for 450 yards against Kansas. I know you like that secondary, but I was just looking at the Oklahoma State schedule, and like, that Kansas State game, obviously very, very tough end of the year, but that's at home, and Kansas, like, if he's on the cusp of hitting some benchmarks, you know, and I don't know what those benchmarks are going to be, but if he's on the verge of breaking some records, couldn't you see Mike Gundy going to Yurcicich, the offensive coordinator, and being like, all right, you know what we're going to do? We're going to get him these records, and he's going to go win this Heisman right now.
Hell yeah. And the other thing about, I mean, I think Oklahoma State, too, is enough of an upstart, like a non-traditional power. Even, I mean, they're always good, but just for some reason we always forget about them. If they are absolutely in the central focus of the college football world for a stretch, then I think that's enough of a story that Mason Rudolph has elevated them that all of a sudden the Heisman becomes almost – I mean, he's going to have a major advantage. So there's a lot to like about his Heisman campaign. And I'm writing about this actually today, but he's a plus 2,000, I think, money line bet, which is a pretty good value considering he's like, you know, 10th or something in terms of the best odds to win it. So I like that pick in terms of looking for some Vegas value as well.
All right. I went on the other side of the Bedlam rivalry, going Baker Mayfield. And this is tagged with my Coach of the Year pick, which is Lincoln Riley. This is tagged with my earlier pick of Oklahoma to the playoff.
Yeah, you're going all, putting all your chips forward on Lincoln Riley.
You know, I got to go somewhere where I'm confident, and I could see that if Oklahoma, and, you know, maybe it is because we mentioned earlier, it's either like upset the Buckeyes in Columbus and stun them there because, boy, that would start the Heisman train, or play really, really well against that phenomenal Ohio State defense, lose, and then go into the Big 12 and run the table, which would include going into Stillwater in what would be like essentially the Heisman matchup right there in early November, November 4th. I mean, November 4th schedule is sick. That's Alabama LSU night. That's Oklahoma, Oklahoma State night. I mean, this is that already got that date circled and getting excited for it. But I'm kind of looking at this, that is, if Oklahoma is going to be able to make the most of this transition, and if this is going to be like one of those special seasons in Norman, then, you know, Baker Mayfield's got to be a part of it. And if he's a part of it, I don't think that there's enough proven names anywhere else for me to think that the Heisman electorate and the Heisman voters are going to give the credit to anybody else. So, yeah, that's why I've got like this whole parlay going. And like parlays are great ways to lose money. But, you know, like in terms of my projections, it's like, all right, well, if you're picking Oklahoma to be in the playoff, then you're picking Lincoln Riley as your coach of the year. And if Lincoln Riley's the coach of the year, you got to think Baker Mayfield's a pretty good Heisman candidate.
I like it, man. Don't diversify. Just go all in.
Yeah.
You know what you want. Just go all in. I mean, Baker Mayfield is another one that I feel like is getting a little bit overlooked in this sort of year of the quarterback talk, because the guy was in the Heisman Finals last year.
Yeah.
He is as difficult to defend as anyone out there. He's got a great offensive line in front of him. They still are talented at the receiver position. And while he doesn't have Joe Mixon and Samaje Perine at running back, that offense doesn't strike me as one that needs some NFL talent at running back to be efficient. I think that they can get it done with the committee that they've got. I like the pick. I think Baker Mayfield is, I think he's one of the best, most exciting, entertaining players in college football. He's going to have plenty of highlight plays, signature plays. Whereas, you know, Mason Rudolph's just freaking, you know, it's just stats.
Slinging Baker, it, dude.
Mason Rudolph. Baker Mayfield's got the, you know, this like backyard ball, Sandlot style that's Heisman friendly. So I think there's a lot of reason to like that pick.
Yeah. Let's call this the award winning question of the day segment. The question of the day for Barton Simmons is, who's your coach of the year pick?
Pat Fitzgerald.
Yes.
That's another one. Hey, if I'm gonna be betting on Northwestern to win the Big Ten West,
then he surely is going to be up there.
Then, for sure. I'm not going to like go and throw my coach of the year pick at someone that's you know, Nick Saban or something. Like, this is, I think Pat Fitzgerald is one of the best coaches in college football. I think he has got a roster that has a good quarterback, a good running back, an experienced offensive line, and they're always really good on defense, and they return a lot of guys, and they have one of the best secondaries in college football. So a lot to like about Northwestern. I'm at this point, because we're so far into the preseason preview machine, I feel like I've been hyping Northwestern forever, and I've like doubled and tripled and quadrupled down on them at this point. So, you know, they may go out and lose the first game, and I'm just going to like – I'm going to go into depression. But I just think that they're going to be really good. And I think Pat Fitzgerald is one of the best coaches in college football. And if he takes them to a you know, 10-2 type regular season, 11-1 type regular season, very possible, then I think he's going to have a real, you know, he's probably going to have an easy W there when it comes to the award ceremonies.
That back-to-back of at Wisconsin, home against Penn State is so tough. But, man, if they can get through that with
a that's help, all. But that's the whole season.
Yeah,
that is the whole
I know.
Season right
that's
there.
Then, like, they'll fly below the radar after that and just keep stacking up these W's. And if they can get, like, if they can get a little bit of luck, man, I could see them finishing the year with a whole string of wins. And all of a sudden, you're looking up and you're like, oh, man, if Northwestern, like, goes to Illinois, like you could be looking at a situation where it's like, if Northwestern goes to Illinois and wins, which we absolutely think they will, they're going to go to play in the Big Ten championship game. Right. Holy crap.
And then they'll have a shot at the playoffs. They just beat, you know, whoever. And the part of the other reason why I like why that Penn State game is really tricky is if you look, I believe it's already got a time scheduled. I think it's already an 11 a.m. kick.
Oh,
game.
Yeah.
And that, if you're Penn State and you're going into, you know, windy Chicago and you're kicking at 11 a.m. and, you know, Northwestern at that point isn't necessarily like a high profile team yet. They're it's just those games are such sleepwalk games. You see them every year. Northwestern plays them and they're ugly and it's windy out and it's a trap. It's just a bad trap, and I could see Penn State rolling in there without a lot of energy and losing that game, which would be a huge win for Northwestern in terms of resume builders. And I think they're very capable as far as matching up well to play Wisconsin and beat them. So, again, I just think that there's some opportunity there on the schedule. Who you got? Who's yours?
But my coach of the year is Lincoln Riley.
That's right. Yeah.
Just yeah. My OU parlay. It's in.
Dude, Lincoln Riley, man. If he starts out that hot, boy, that is some serious expectations you set for himself for the future. But he's in a great position to get it done.
Like, and I don't have a lot of reasons to think that he's not going to be able to hang in there, right?
Yeah, I wrote when Bob Stoops stepped down that Oklahoma would be just fine with Lincoln Riley. And I know that's a little bit dismissive of one of the greatest coaches of all time, at least modern coaches of all time. So, but I don't – there's – I have a lot of confidence in Lincoln Riley. He is as highly respected as anybody out there, you know – he's got a crutch now with Ruffin on board that to kind of help him manage and navigate. I just think he is, I think he's pretty good, and I think they got a really good roster. I think their defense is better than people realize.
He's been on a staff for like 14 years. It's not like, I mean, he was a graduate assistant and a student assistant for the first couple of them, but yeah, like, you've come up under Leach. You've come up under Ruffin. You had like a 2-year internship with Bob Stoops, a national championship winning quarterback. National championship winning head coach. You get Ruff on the staff. Like he's in the Oklahoma football machine, by the way, you know? Like,
yeah.
It'll be fun. I'm excited for it. He is Barton Simmons. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Barton Simmons. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Make sure that you subscribe to the 24/7 Sports Podcast because subscribers get them first. We've got Dennis Dodd coming up on Wednesday. We've got picks with Tom Fornelli on Thursday and lots more of updates and thoughts on week 1 from Barton and I. Along with that, Barton, I'm excited, man. Thank you very much.
Peace.